culture, reviews of films, performances, public art, and exhibitions, as well as artwork to publish in our upcoming print edition. The submission deadline is November 21st. For details, visit ubcuja.com and keep up with us at facebook.com/ubcuja or at ubcuja on Twitter.
And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM. Good evening. My name is Brian McDonald. It's time for Skull's Halt and some spoken word entertainment. Tonight, we're going to be taking a listen to something we've been ignoring for a while, The Shadow. And that will be rounded off with a moment of suspense that's coming up right now. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some spoken word entertainment here with us at CITR 101.9 FM.
A flaming skull floats through the room, and a man disappears. A fortune in jewels stolen, while Leona watched. Yet he could see nothing but the skeleton fingers. Crime is rampant, but there is no clue. Nothing but a flaming skull. Hello, creeps. This is Peter Lorre, back again to open the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. And tonight, we have a guest appearance of our friend, the Shadow, one of the most fascinating characters in the business of crime detection. He's the man who is always getting shot in his invisibility. But in this adventure, the case of the Flaming Skull, the Shadow is nearly made permanently invisible by a skeleton.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Case of the Flaming Skull. A late afternoon thunderstorm breaks over the city. As people run for cover, two men collide as they dash into a small doorway.
Oh, sorry?
Oh, that's all right. Cranston. Lamont Cranston.
Why, it's Steve Crane. Hello, Steve.
Lamont, if this isn't the weirdest coincidence...
Haven't seen you for ages, Steve. How's the promising young chemist?
Lamont, listen.
Last I heard, you had a swell job doing research for the Guild Labs. Still with them?
Yes, Lamont.
Married?
Yes. Lamont, listen to me. You won't believe it, but I was on my way over to see you. Lamont, I'm in a jam.
What's the matter, Steve?
I've been walking around all day. I've been going out of my mind. Then I remembered that you used to study occult science and all that, and...
What kind of a jam needs occult scientists?
Lamont, please don't laugh at me, but I'm going to die.
We all are, sooner or later.
But we don't all get special announcements.
What? You did?
Yes.
When? How?
It was last night. I've been sleeping well lately. I've been nervous and high-strung. Been working pretty hard in a new thorium synthesis.
Yes?
About 2 o'clock this morning, I got up for a drink of water. I went into the bathroom, turned on the faucet, and then...
Go on.
I saw a flaming skull staring at me.
You what?
In the darkness, I saw a hideous flaming skull grinning at me, pale and flickering, burning a dull green in the blackness.
Yes?
It was a terrible shock. I suppose I must have passed out. When I came to, it was gone. But I knew, Lamont. I knew it was a warning.
Steve, you're tired, overworked. You can't.
It was a presentiment, Lamont. It was a warning.
It was a hallucination. Now, pay attention to Uncle Lamont. You want my advice?
Yes, of course.
All right, here's the address of a friend of mine, Dr. Neil Harrison. He specializes in your kind of case. Too much work and too much imagination. Now, you go see him at once.
Then you don't think that skull was...
My dear Steve, I speak now as an occult specialist. The most horrible presentiment in the world can be dispelled with bicarbonate of soda and 2 weeks in the country.
Oh, hello.
Is this Mr. Cranston?
Yes.
This is Helen Grant, Steve's wife.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Grant.
Oh, Mr. Cranston, can you come over to our house right away?
Come over to your... Well, what time is it, Mrs. Grant?
Oh, it's 5 o'clock, almost dawn. I know it's an unusual request, Mr. Cranston.
Well, anything wrong?
Yes.
With Steve?
Yes.
What's happened?
He's been kidnapped. Mr. Cranston, I'm so glad you're here. I've been half out of my mind.
No. Take it easy, Mrs. Grant. Suppose I come in and you tell me all about it.
Yes, come in. Please sit down, Mr. Cranston.
Oh, thank you. Now, Mrs. Grant, from the beginning.
Well, it was about midnight. I'd gone to bed and been asleep for a few hours, and suddenly I woke. I heard a sound, an awful sound.
What was it?
Well, it was a sobbing, crying noise. It seemed to come from Steve's bedroom across the hall.
What did you do?
Well, I got up and went to the door of my room. I opened it. It was dark in the house. And in the blackness, I saw...
Yes, what?
A flaming skull.
You were sure of that?
Yes. Yes, it was a little distance away. It was coming out of Steve's room, floating in the air. Burned with a green flickering flame. It was ghastly.
What did you do?
I screamed. Then I fainted. When I came to, it was gone. I rushed into Steve's room to tell him, and Steve was gone, too.
I see.
All his clothes were in his room. Everything. He hadn't packed and left. It's obvious he was taken away. Taken by that horrible skull. I didn't know what to do. Last I remembered, he'd said something about you being an expert in the occult, weird things. So I called you.
Well, I'm glad you did, Mrs. Grant.
But what are we going to do, Mr. Grant?
No, don't worry. We're going to find Steve.
How about it, Miss Lane? Is Cranston fooling you with this ghost story?
I don't know yet, Commissioner. I want to hear the rest of the story.
Well, that's all there is. First, Grant came to me with a story about a flaming skull, then Mrs. Grant.
Was it kidnapping Lamont?
Perhaps. I checked Steve's room. All his clothes were there, his shoes, everything. Most important is... Well, his identification papers were there. Licenses, checkbooks, everything. Doesn't prove much, except that Grant didn't walk out of the house voluntarily. A man might cook up an ingenious plan like this to leave his wife, but he doesn't leave all of his money, papers, and important documents behind.
Yeah, that's right.
How about the sobbing, crying noise Mrs. Grant heard?
Well, I couldn't find anything to account for that.
So we're left with exactly this. A guy disappears, and he and his wife tell a crazy yarn about flaming skulls, and we're supposed to believe that said skull kidnapped the man.
That explanation will do until a better one comes along, Commissioner. Got a better one?
Sure, I got a better one. The obvious one. Grant and his wife cooked up the story to beat the insurance company.
He isn't insured.
Then he's trying to get publicity for some crazy invention he made.
He was a research chemist working for the Guild Labs. He made no invention, and if he did, it would belong to the Guild Company and not to him.
I don't believe you or Grant or his wife, and I don't believe in flaming skulls either. You can chew on that for a while. Weston? Yeah? What? Say that again. Well, I'll be... Okay, coming right over.
What is it, Commissioner? You look startled, to say the least.
That phone call has just dropped a bomb in my lap, Miss Lane.
Now, let's have the explosion.
Adam Edwards, the broker, has just reported a burglar in his home. $15,000 in cash was stolen.
Why, Commissioner, a $15,000 robbery is no explosion.
Yeah? Well, maybe you'll get a bang out of this. The dough was stolen by a flaming skull. Ah, Mr. Edwards. I'm Commissioner Weston.
Oh, yes, pleased to meet you, Commissioner.
This is Lamont Cranston, Miss Margot Land.
How do you do?
I brought them along because they happen to be interested in Flaming Skulls, too.
Oh, you've seen the operation, Mr. Cranston?
Yes.
Suppose you let us have the story, Mr. Edwards.
Well, it's quite simple and quite frightening. I was awakened this morning about 3 o'clock by the sound of a body moving about in my study.
Uh-huh.
It's a well-known fact that I keep large sums of cash in the house. I assumed that some ill-advised burglar was after my money.
Why ill-advised?
Well, I'm a crack shot, Mr. Cranston. I have a license to keep a revolver in the house. I immediately arose and got the gun and tiptoed toward the study.
And then?
I opened the door very carefully, and in the darkness I saw a flaming skull hovering over my desk, while flaming skeleton hands rifled the drawers.
Oh, so now a pair of hands are added to the skull. Pretty soon we'll get the whole skeleton.
Now, what did you do, Mr. Edwards?
Well, I hadn't lost all my nerve. I fired, but I'm afraid my aim wasn't very good.
Yes?
Instantly, the skull and hands rushed off through the darkness. I tried to follow. I heard the thing blundering around the far side of the study, and before I could catch up, it was gone. And so was my money. That's all.
That's too much for me. What is this, a conspiracy? Are you all trying to pull my leg?
You don't believe my story, Commissioner.
Frankly, no.
I see. All right, come this way, please. I have something to show you.
Why?
You see, I'm an amateur photographer. I had this closet fitted up as a dark room. The door to it is right next to the study door. Evidently, the flaming skull blundered into the closet by mistake.
I still don't see what all this has got to do with a skull.
I want you to come into the dark room, please.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, but this red light here is all the illumination I can give you.
It's enough, Mr. Edwards. Go ahead.
Now, when the intruder came into this room last night, he apparently dislodged one of my unexposed plates and knocked it into the developer tray. I want you to look at this plate, Commissioner. Tell me what you see on it.
Cranston.
It's a skeleton hand. Well, this is a fine thing, Mr. Cranston. A fine thing indeed.
What's eating you, Margot?
What's eating me? It's a question I've been wanting to ask you. Sit around like a bump on a log all day.
I was thinking. No, worrying about the flaming skull.
Suddenly, at 7 o'clock tonight, you announce we're going for a drive. Where?
To visit a friend.
Why?
To pick up a clue on this case.
Who's the friend?
Dr. Neil Harrison. I sent Steve Grant to see him yesterday afternoon. It's just possible that Steve might have said something to Dr. Harrison that would give us a clue.
Then all that worrying, I mean thinking, this afternoon didn't help? No inspiration?
It certainly did help, Margot, but right now, the fire of inspiration needs a little more coal.
To be shoveled on by Lamont Cranston Stoker.
No. Lamont Cranston Shadow.
Next patient, please. Yeah, that's odd. Waiting room's empty. I could have sworn I heard a patient come in. Who's that?
Your patient, Dr. Harrison.
Patient? Where?
An invisible patient, doctor.
Why, this is absurd. It's some trick. Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
The Shadow?
You have heard of the Shadow, Dr. Harrison. The Shadow seeks only one thing, the truth.
The truth about what?
The truth about all things. The truth about Steve Grant.
Grant? Oh, yes, yes.
He came to you yesterday?
Yes, Lamont Cranston sent him.
You treated him?
No, I did not.
Why not? The truth, Dr. Harrison.
Yes, I'll tell the truth. I could not treat him. He was...
Dr. Harrison! He's dead. Shot by somebody from outside that window.
Lamont! Lamont! Where are you, Lamont?
Right here, Margot.
I heard shots while I was waiting in the car.
Someone fired through the window while the Shadow was questioning Dr. Harrison. The doctor's dead. Now, come on, we've got to locate that killer if we can.
But it's pitch dark, Lamont.
Careful. He must have run off this way.
Do you know who killed the doctor?
No, I'm afraid we'll never find out now.
Lamont!
Yes, Margot.
Look, running down the street. Way up there. Oh, Lamont!
Yes, I see it, Margot.
It's The flaming skeleton.
Oh, yes, the shadow will be back in just a moment. You know, one of the most mysterious things about this program is just what this announcement is doing in the middle of it. You don't have to be the shadow to figure out the answer. They just want somebody to say that if you write your letters B-mail, they'll get there faster, take less space on crowded transports, and make more folks at home happy because you can write shorter letters, but more of them. So for fast communication with home, V-mail. And now, back to the shadow.
Now, why did I ever meet you, Cranston? Why did I ever lay eyes on you?
Commissioner, you're not blaming Lamont for the flaming skull.
Flaming skeleton now, Marco.
No, I'm just complaining that he gets me mixed up in the screwiest crime.
Now, there's nothing screwy about this. Harrison was killed by a .38 caliber slug fired through that window. What could be more realistic than that?
Nothing, except that you claim a glowing skeleton finger pulled the trigger.
We saw the skeleton, Commissioner.
Oh, I believe you, Miss Lane. Too many people have seen it for me to hang on to that hallucination theory. I only wish I could see it for once.
Commissioner.
Yes?
Commissioner.
Yes, what is it, Cardona?
We've just picked up a flash from one of the patrol cars.
Yes?
They've spotted the flaming skull just breaking into the Zircon Jewel Store on State Avenue. He's in there now, and if we rush, we can get over there in time to trap him coming out.
Now let's go, Commissioner. Maybe this time you'll see the skeleton.
Where is this Zircon Jewel Store? How much further, Cardona?
Just around the next corner, Commissioner.
I only hope we're there in time.
Yes, I wouldn't want the Commissioner to lose the pleasure of meeting Mr. Skeleton.
All right. Stop here, Cardona. We'll walk the rest of the way.
Yes, sir.
I can see the police patrol car up ahead.
Then Mr. Skeleton must still be inside the store.
Come on. And remember, let's keep quiet. This is our big chance.
Commissioner!
What in blazes are those maniacs?
Hey, look, he's coming out.
It's the flaming skeleton, Commissioner.
Hey, come on, let's go. Get hold of him, you men! Don't let him get away!
They're shooting wild, Commissioner.
Well, I can't blame them. Saints alive, but that's a nasty thing to see in the dark.
Get him away!
Faster!
It's no use, Commissioner. We'll never get him. No one will ever get him.
Don't turn superstitious on me, Cardona.
Cardona's right, Commissioner. The skeleton's vanished.
We couldn't hold him, sir. We did the best we could. He got prey.
Now, this is a fine thing. What's the matter with you nursery babies? Afraid of a skeleton?
It's not that, Commissioner.
Isn't it obvious, Commissioner? This flaming skeleton is a startling, bewildering sight. The shock of seeing it checks everyone just long enough to give the skeleton a few seconds leeway for escape.
That's it, Mr. Cranston.
Okay. Let's get back to the Zircon store and see how much Mr. Skeleton got away with this time.
Now, wait.
What now?
Apparently, our thief didn't get away with all he took. Look on the ground here.
Well, Lamont, three little jewels.
I got them. Holy smoke. They're diamonds.
Diamonds? That color?
Yes, Commissioner. They've turned blood red.
Oh, Lamont. Lamont.
Yes?
Stop pacing up and down and listen to me.
Got an idea?
Mm-hmm. Suppose we get some sleep. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, Lamont. How much longer are we going to sit here and think?
Until I can figure out three things.
We're not going to go through all that again, are we?
Why was Steve Grant kidnapped? Why was Dr. Harrison murdered?
Because they knew something about the flaming skeleton.
Yeah, but what?
You know the answer to that. But tell me yourself. It's tied up with a photograph of the skeleton hand and the diamonds that turned red.
But why did those diamonds turn red? How was that photograph made?
I'm going home.
Only Harrison had taken Grant on as a patient.
Didn't he?
No. He told the shadow he couldn't treat him.
Well, what difference does that make?
Well, if he'd taken Steve as a patient, he might have left a record of some kind. This way, his information died with him.
Oh, I'm going home.
It's the door. I'll take it.
Who in the world could that be so early?
Oh, Mrs. Grant, come in.
Mr. Cranston, I just got...
Oh, this is Miss Lane. She's working with me on the case. Margot, Mrs. Grant.
How do you do,
Hello.
Mrs. Grant?
What's wrong, Mrs. Grant?
Oh, Mr. Cranston, I'm frightened.
Why?
The flaming skull.
What about it?
Well, I think I'm going to be the next victim.
You?
What makes you think so, Mrs. Grant?
I've had warnings.
You've seen the skull?
No, but I've seen the warnings. Mr. Cranston, since the night that Steve was taken, my whole house has been glowing.
How do you mean that?
Oh, when I put the lights out, objects flame up and glow with a weird green color. Steve's watch and the money on his desk, spoons, silver, many things. Golly. Then last night I decided I'd sleep in Steve's room. I thought if the flaming skull came back, I'd be waiting. Did you see it? Did it come back? Well, I didn't see it, but I know it was in the room.
How do you know?
Look at my arms. Oh, golly, they're covered with burns.
Burns?
Look, Lamont. It's as though a skeleton hand had clutched Mrs. Grant, or the hand of some mythological god like Thor.
What?
I said like...
Yeah, you said Thor.
Yes.
Thor, what an idiot I've been. Steve practically told me the answer to this case when I first met him.
Oh, what do you mean, Lamont?
I mean I know all about the flaming skeleton. Come on, Mrs. Grant. We're going to police headquarters.
All right, now what do you want me to do about Mrs. Grant, Cranston?
Well, here's the setup. You're to take Mrs. Grant into protective custody. It's to be kept a secret.
Why?
You'll find out soon enough. At 6 o'clock tonight, I want you to release this news item to the papers. I've written it out for you.
Well, not so fast, Cranston. Now, you're making me dizzy.
Now, listen, Commissioner. Do you want to get your hands on the flaming skeleton?
What a question.
Then do exactly what I've told you.
Then what in blazes are you going to do?
I'm going to trap the flaming skeleton.
Steve Grant, the police have taken Mrs. Grant into protective custody. She's being held under close guard at the old mansion house outside the city. There, in a lonely building, set in lonely fields, the widow of Steve
Turn
Grant...
Turn it off, Margot. No, that's fine. What time is it?
8 o'clock.
Then Mr. Skeleton's known the news for 2 hours. He'll be here soon.
Here at the mansion house?
Right. Under the misapprehension that Mrs. Grant is here, too.
But he's only going to find just us folks, just the two of us.
The three of us, Margot. You're forgetting the shadow.
Oh, say, shouldn't you be the shadow now? Suppose our flaming skeleton walks in unexpectedly.
He can't. We'll have plenty of warning of his coming. I've run a circuit of electricity in a circle around the field surrounding this house.
But how will that warn us?
Well, there are 4 concentric rings circling this house, Margot. Each is made of a single wire carrying enough current to signal when Mr. Skeleton steps over it. We'll hear the signals on this electroscope connected with the circuits.
But wouldn't any person crossing those circuits cause the signal to sound?
Not any person, Margot. Just Mr. Skeleton.
Why?
Because of the peculiar constitution of his body. You see? Hold it. That's the electroscope.
Mr. Skeleton?
Yes, he's inside the outermost circuit. He's inside the second circuit. He's inside the third. You know what to do?
I'm supposed to put out the lights and hide in the closet alongside the switch.
Right. When Mr. Skeleton gets into this room, the electroscope signals will reach a peak and then cut off automatically.
Then I'm supposed to switch on the lights again.
Oh, he's inside the fourth circuit. Get moving, Margot.
Lamont, I...
Don't argue. This man is dynamite. Put out the lights.
Right.
I'll get in the closet. Stand by.
What's that? Who's there? Don't move.
Good evening, Steve Grant.
Who's that?
The Shadow.
The Shadow? I can't see you.
No man sees the Shadow. But all men see you, Mr. Skeleton.
You know Shadow?
The Shadow knows everything. You were a foolish man, Grant. A fool.
I was desperate. When Dr. Harrison told me I'd caught radium poisoning, that the salts were in my blood and bones, that death was waiting 2 months off,
You sought for revenge on the world?
No. No, I thought only of my wife. She had nothing. There was no money, no insurance, nothing. I had to raise something for her. I couldn't leave her penniless.
You had no right to rob.
There was no other way to raise money.
You had no right to kill.
There was no other way to keep my secret. I couldn't let her discover her husband was a thief. She would never have kept the money I was raising for her.
She will have no part of anything you've stolen.
For heaven's sake, you can't betray me.
The Shadow seeks justice. Justice. There will be justice for your wife. But there must be justice for those you have robbed and those you have killed.
No. Listen, I'm going to die anyway. I'll pay for the deaths, pay with my own.
There must be justice, Grant. You must give yourself up.
You'll never take me. I warn you, I've killed before. I'm not afraid to kill now.
You're mad, Grant. You must pay, in full.
No!
Can you, a flaming skeleton, kill an invisible shadow?
Wherever you are, I'll kill you.
Kill the shadow with what? Stop, Grant. You can't escape the shadow.
Try and stop me.
Stop, Grant.
Shadow.
Stay here, Margot. Keep out of this.
There he goes, across the field. You can see the glowing skeleton running.
Keep back, Margot.
Why? What's wrong?
Grant is running toward the high-tension wires on the road. If he gets too close to that tremendous current... Stop, Grant! Stop running!
You'll never stop me! Someone will never stop me!
If you value your life, don't move another step. Stop! Yes, Margot. He's dead.
Well, let's get back to town and notify Commissioner Weston, Margot.
Oh, Lamont, it was awful to be electrocuted that way.
Perhaps it's just as well, Margot. Fate simply anticipated the state executioner.
Lamont, I can't understand it. What happened to Grant?
He was experimenting on radium salt called thorium.
Oh, that's why the mention of the god Thor put you on the right track.
Yes, Margot. Grant apparently became infected with enough radium salt to poison him. When he first saw the flaming skull grinning at him, it was his own face he saw in the bathroom mirror. Dr. Harrison must have explained the truth to Grant. Grant turned desperate and tried to raise money to leave his wife.
And he killed Dr. Harrison before the doctor could tell the police the truth about the flaming skeleton.
Yes, but I should have realized the truth sooner. Naturally, radium emanations are the only thing that can make a man's bones shine in the dark. Radium explains how Edward's photographic plate was exposed. Radium accounts for the diamonds that turned color. Radium emanations change the color of precious stones.
So when you had that news broadcast made about his wife being at Mansion House, you knew that it would trap him.
Well, of course, his only thought was for his wife. That's the explanation of the sound she heard that night he vanished. She heard poor Steve crying hysterically. When she got up and opened the door, she didn't see a skeleton kidnapping Steve. She saw poor Steve leaving.
Not poor Steve. Poor Mrs. Grant.
Don't worry about her, Margot. The Shadow may be just, but he's also merciful.
The Shadow is going to temper his justice with mercy?
Yes, and the name of that mercy is Cranston's bankroll.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local, independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute. Just visit CITR.ca/discorder/contribute. You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
Now, Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Gregory Peck as star of The Lonely Road, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live. To your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Gregory Peck in a remarkable tale of suspense.
Okay, Lieutenant. You can question him now.
Thanks, Doc. Well, hello, Gare. How goes it?
Oh, not bad. You want a statement, I suppose.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Well, tell me first, is she apt to get the extreme penalty?
Well, that'll depend a lot upon what you have to say.
I see. Well, I'll give it to you straight. I'm counting on you to do your best for her.
Oh, sure. Oh, go ahead, shoot.
Okay. The first time I saw Jenny, she was coming along the road carrying a suitcase. I knew she was headed for our place because it's the only house for miles around there. I was trimming the hedge, and I'd got as far as the rear gate when she reached it. I waited for her to speak.
Is this the Gare place?
That's right. What can I do for you?
You had an ad in the paper for a girl to do general housework.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, come along into the house. My wife will want to have a talk with you.
This is a beautiful place you've got here, Mr. Gare. But it's certainly hard to get to.
You've walked from the highway?
Yeah. Must have been almost 5 miles. The sun is something fierce. I almost gave up. How many buses run along here?
No, we're pretty isolated. But when there's help in the house, I always manage to give them a lift into town.
That makes it nice, Mr. Gare.
What's your name?
Jenny.
Jenny what?
Jenny will do.
All right, Jenny. In here, please. And Mrs. Gare's a trifle hard of hearing, so you'll have to speak up a bit. Oh, Helen, this is Jenny. She's come in answer to our advertisement.
Oh, yes. I'm very glad to see you, Jenny. Won't you sit down?
She was extraordinarily looking. Not beautiful or pretty. Striking, I guess, would be the word. She had heavy black braids wound about her head. Her eyes were a clear green and looked straight through you. And she was lean and powerful, like a young animal, a leopard or a panther or something. Well, my wife engaged Jenny. That night she cooked an excellent dinner and served it well. She had on a purple skirt and a cerise, I guess you'd call it, blouse, and I could see Helen eye it with disfavor. Every time the girl came close to me, I could feel the strength of her. And those green eyes watched us as if she was sizing us up. We took our coffee and cigarettes out on the veranda after dinner. You can look right over the orange grove to the hills. It's nice.
Steve, what do you think about Jenny?
Oh, well, it's a little early to judge. Seems capable enough. That was a darn good dinner, if you ask me. Maybe we're in luck, darling.
Maybe. What is she, do you think? Mexican?
No, I'd say Slavic with that build and shape of face. A little more coffee, Helen. Half a cup.
You're probably right. There's a sort of, gypsy arrogance, boldness about her that makes me uneasy, as if I'd have something to cope with.
We went up to bed early. I was pretty exhausted every night with all the physical work I had to do. I turned out the light and for some reason stepped over to the window. Jenny's room was downstairs on the same side of the house as ours in the rear. Her light was still on. She was getting ready for bed, and her shadow, huge and black, lay across the lawn. Her arms were raised to take down those heavy braids. There was something actually classic about the thing. The picture of it stayed in my mind long after I'd got into bed. Well, 2 or 3 days went by, and Jenny... Well, the thing was, you were conscious of her all the time. Wherever she was, about the house, whatever she was doing, you thought about her. I was working in the garage one afternoon when she came out there with the butcher knife.
Mrs. Gare says you have a whetstone out here. Could I get you to sharpen my knife for me, Mr. Gare?
Of course. Just a moment.
What's that you're doing?
Oh, I'm trying to mend this old bear trap.
Oh, are you a trapper, Mr. Gare?
Oh, no. Hardly. There's a coyote around that's been stealing the chickens. I'm hoping to catch him. There. Now then, let's have the knife.
What do you do, Mr. Gare?
Well, Jenny, Mrs. Gare was a concert pianist at the time of our marriage. I was a manager. Now I take care of her properties. Holdings, investments, you know.
You mean you sign things for her, like checks and papers and things?
Power of attorney, yes, that's part of it.
Hmm. Pretty soft for you, huh, Mr. Gare?
Oh, on the contrary, it's quite a job. Keeps me busy.
I still say you've got a pretty setup. But she didn't get such a bad deal herself. She's crazy in love with you. Anybody can see that. Why not? You're good looking, Mr. Gare. And young. You must be at least 12 years younger than she is.
Now, here's your knife, Jenny. Careful now. It's like a razor.
Thanks a lot. That's the way I want it. I can't stand a dull knife. So, I'll probably bother you often.
A few more days went by. I finished my trap and set it out near the chicken run, hoping I'd catch my thief. And one night after dinner, we were in the living room. What's the matter, Helen?
Steve, it's that girl. She was standing there in the dining room door listening.
Jenny? Well, she probably likes music. What's the harm?
Oh, it isn't that. She's always listening and watching. It's beginning to get on my nerves.
How about her work?
Oh, well, she works hard enough. She's willing and clean as a pin, but... Well, I have a feeling she doesn't respect me, that I just don't figure in her scheme of things. She's just simply taken the place over. I don't even run my own house anymore.
Well, fire her, why don't you?
Oh, no, I couldn't.
Say the word and I'll do it for
no,
you.
No, no, I don't want you to. Steve, frankly, I'd be afraid to tell her to go. She might get ugly and set fire to the house or something.
Oh, I never heard such nonsense in my life. What ails you, Helen? Aren't you well?
I'm just terribly nervous, Steve. Maybe that's why she takes advantage.
Well, that settled that. I felt like a heel, though, because I was relieved that Helen didn't want to fire Jenny. I was obliged to admit to myself that the girl was getting under my skin. Any little service she had to perform for me, she made very special, standing as close as she dared. I could feel the magnetism of that strong, perfect body. Her hair smelled like new apples, and those clear green eyes would linger caressingly in mine. Then after about 2 weeks, one night, it must have been 1 or 2 o'clock.
Steve. Steve, wake up.
What's the matter?
That girl. I think she's out there in the hallway. I think she's been in this room.
Oh, Helen.
I'm frightened, Steve. Please make a light.
Oh, all right. No one around. Helen, you must have been dreaming, dear.
Oh, perhaps I was. I dream about her often, Steve. Horrid, confused kind of dreams. I'm trying to scream for help and can't. It's just...
Oh, good Lord, Helen, I never thought anybody could get you down. You've got to control yourself somehow. This is just plain silly.
Yes. Yes.
I turned out the light and got back into bed. In a little while, I could hear Helen's even breathing and knew she was asleep. I lay there, thinking about Jenny, of course. I never thought of much else. In a moment, I heard the piano. So faint, I thought I was imagining it. And it came again. Weird. Ghostly. I got up again, put on my robe, and slipped downstairs. The living room was dark except for the moonlight pouring through the window. And Jenny's figure, black against the light, was moving towards me. Almost before I knew it, she'd pressed close against me, crushing her mouth to mine. It was like being stung. Sharp, sweet, terrible. Jenny, what is this?
Don't kid me. You knew this was coming. That it had to come, that nothing could keep us apart. Now, everything's going to be all right.
But Jenny, we can't. Helen is no fool.
We can't let her stand in our way.
What do you mean?
It won't be hard. Just a matter of figuring the best way.
I don't know what you mean, Jenny. And we can't stay here talking like this any longer.
It'll be just you and me, Steve. And all that money. Think what we can do with it. Just think.
Are you crazy?
Yeah. Crazy for you. Just like you are for me. Listen, Steve. Inside of 5 or 6 years, you're going to be stuck with a deaf old woman. What you going to do? Sit here and grow old with her? Not you. sooner or later you'll clear out. So why not now, with me?
Why, it's not so simple as you make it sound, my dear.
All you have to do is to spread around the town that Helen's going to visit her folks, Mississippi or someplace, and leave her to me. Afterwards, you can say your wife's decided to stay down south, that you're going to sell out and join her. Then we can turn everything into cash and we're on our way. Easy?
The next few days I worked outside till my hands bled and my whole body shrieked with pain. To keep from thinking, I began having nightmares. I'd wake up in a cold sweat and lie there longing for daylight, swearing that as soon as morning came, I'd throw that girl out of the house. But she'd brush against me or touch my hand, and I'd be wild for her again. I guess I knew then that sooner or later I'd agree to nearly anything she asked.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Gregory Peck in The Lonely Road by Marion Orth. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Today is the first day of spring, a welcome time everywhere, but especially at Roma. For in Roma's carefully kept vineyards, located in California's choicest wine-growing districts, the precious vines are already stirring with renewed life. The eternal miracle of soil and sun is now creating the luscious goodness of tender grapes that Roma's master vintners patiently, unhurriedly, guide to tempting mellow wine perfection for you. If you've never enjoyed fine Roma California wines, you'll be delighted to discover Roma can offer you so much taste luxury for so little. Yes, Roma is America's first choice in wine for every occasion, every day. Yet, you can enjoy fine Roma wine for just pennies a glass, about the cost of a soft drink. And all Roma wines are bottled at the winery to bring you sealed in, unvarying goodness always. So, for praise-winning hospitality, or for happy family evenings at home, serve Roma Sherry, Port, Muscatel, or Tokay. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma wines. Discover why more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Gregory Peck, who, as Stephen Gare in The Lonely Road, continues a narrative well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Helen began to get on my nerves. It seemed that every day she looked older, washed out, became deafer. I began to despise her, to want her out of my way, out of Jenny's in my way. One morning at breakfast, Jenny came in and stood there looking at me, fixedly.
Well, Jenny, what is it?
If you're going to town today, Mr. Gare, I've written down some things for the house.
Very well, Jenny. If your list's ready, give it to me. I'll be leaving in a few minutes. I knew what she meant. She was getting impatient. My reply, which she waited for with those green eyes fixed on mine, was virtually a consent to her plan. As for me, I wasn't sure what I meant to do, but I thought it would do no harm at least to set the ball rolling. In town, I dropped into the garage and asked the mechanic to look the car over. I said Mrs. Gare was planning a trip to visit her family in Mississippi, that I'd have to drive her into Tucson to take the train, and that my tires weren't so good. After that, I stopped at the realty office.
Well, really, Mr. Gare, you're thinking of selling that beautiful place of yours?
Oh, it's just a possibility. I don't want any prospective buyers about the places yet, but my wife is planning a trip south, and I may follow her and remain there permanently. Help such a problem. Place of ours takes a lot of handling. If fellow gets fed up after a while.
Well, there'd be no difficulty disposing of the property, Mr. Gare. Well, just let me know when you're ready, and meanwhile, I won't bother you with people coming.
I drove home in a sort of trance. I wasn't shocked at what I'd done, and the thing was still wide open if I wanted to back out. When I got home, I didn't want to go into the house. So far, I'd had no luck with the coyote, so I busied myself setting the trap in another spot. While I was doing this, Jenny came out with that butcher knife again, and we went into the garage. Helen was at the piano.
Did you do what I told you to, see?
Yes.
Good. I can't stand this much longer.
Nor I, Jenny. But I can't bear to be here when...
Kiss me, Steve. Don't worry. It'll be when you're out of the house.
She didn't say any more, just looked at me with a twisted little smile. I gave her the sharpened knife, and she kissed me and went into the house. At dinner that night, Helen said...
I had words with Jenny today, Steve. I can't have her around any longer. You can fire her tonight, if you will.
What? Oh, no, my dear. I offered to do it once, and you wouldn't let me. Now you'll just have to do it yourself.
Steve, I'm afraid of her terribly.
Why, has she been ugly, threatening?
Oh, don't shout so, Steve. I'm not as deaf as all that. And she'll hear you. No, she hasn't threatened me, nothing like that. There's just something about her that fills me with horror.
Oh, you're imagining things, Helen. What possible reason could she have for harming you?
I don't know, but this house has become a dreadful place. I'm cold all the time, and I'm shaky, and you seem different. You look at me sometimes as if you hate me.
Now, see here,
don't
Helen,
try to reason with me. If she doesn't get out of this house quick, I'll lose my mind. She's like a witch or something malignant or evil.
Jenny came in just then to change the plates for dessert. As she bent over to take the platter, she held that knife in her hand in such a way that my blood ran cool for a minute. After she'd gone out...
You haven't noticed it, but lately I haven't taken a mouthful of food until I've seen you start to eat for fear she'll poison me.
That's ridiculous. Why shouldn't she poison me as well?
Because she's crazy about you.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And you're crazy about her. Don't deny it, Steve. I may be deaf, but I'm not blind, you know.
Look, Helen, I'm going into town for a drive. If you want to fire Jenny while I'm gone, that's all right with me. I tried not to dwell on the immediate events, but to think about the time when I'd be free to go away with Jenny. The drive into town seemed endless, but at last I pulled up in front of the hotel.
Evening, Mr. Gare. Come for the papers?
Yes, and a cigar, maybe, Fred. I looked around the little lobby. There wasn't a soul in there that I knew. I watched the people. One minute feeling sorry for them because their lives were so drab. The next envying them because they were so secure, simple. And I was sitting there, staring unseeingly at the local paper, when I suddenly came out of this trance, or a spell that I'd been under. The shock of realization was frightful. I didn't want anything to happen to Helen. I prayed to heaven I'd get home in time. I kept recalling similar instances of such crimes I'd read in newspapers. I'd always wondered how people could become involved in such things. Well, I knew all about it now. Weak fool to let a coarse creature like that lead me into such a thing. If only I could be in time. I'd throw that girl out and devote the rest of my life to making Helen happy. Helen, generous, loving, intelligent, and talented. Why hadn't I thought of all this before? Then I saw the car. It was parked at the side of the highway right at my turnoff. I knew it was a police car. I cursed to myself and prayed. Don't let them take long. I've got to be in time for Helen. Please. An officer stepped out into the road and waved his flash. Please, I said to myself. Please.
Hello.
What's up, officer?
Oh, looking for a stolen car, but not a baby like that one.
A local car, was it?
Yeah. Hey, you better let me have a look at your operator's card, my friend. You must have been doing about 80 along that stretch.
Oh, sure. Here you are, officer. Sorry I was overdoing it. I was just in town, and I guess I stayed longer than I intended. My wife's alone in the house and not very well, and I was in a hurry to get home.
You live down this road?
That's right.
Say, maybe that car could have got down in there. I think I'll...
No. I would have seen it.
Okay, Mr. Gare. Just take it easy, will you?
Certainly will, officer. And thanks. Good night. I stood there in the doorway, looking up. There was a light upstairs in the window of our bedroom. It threw a radiance on the screen door and burned with a steady glow, as if it had been burning like that for ages. As if it had witnessed a scene of horror and brooded over it, keeping the secret to itself. When I started finally for the house, my legs were so stiff I could scarcely walk. I stayed off the gravel, walking on the grass, and went in the back door. There wasn't a sound. I tiptoed through the kitchen, through the dining room, across the hall. Then I could see the light from that lamp spilling down the stairway at the far end of the dark living room. My heart thumped so loud I could hear it. I wanted to call out, but I didn't dare. Whom would I call? Perhaps everything was all right. Perhaps Helen was up there in bed. How I prayed she was. I hesitated on the threshold, thought of glancing into Jenny's room, but that would have looked queer if nothing had happened. I stepped over the threshold. Ah! It was that trap, that bear trap. Somebody had placed it there, ready for me. Ooh, it was excruciating. I wrenched and pulled at the thing. Helen, Jenny, somebody. Come and give me a hand. Oh! Who is it? Oh, help me. Help me, hurry, I'm caught in this trap. Get the hammer, pliers, anything. She reached the bottom of the stairs and snapped on the lights. I've never seen such a sight in my life. There was blood all over the place. On the wallpaper, the white paint. Then I saw Jenny, lying on the floor in a crumpled heap, her long braids soaking in Helen's dress. Her hands and face were spattered with it. Her hair was disheveled, her eyes like pinpoints of fire. And against her side, I could see the gleam of that long, sharp knife. She was coming slowly towards me. Oh, we were beautifully caught, Jenny and I. She with her knife, I with my trap. Helen! Look like that. What's happened?
You planned this together, you two. But it didn't turn out just as you thought it might.
Helen, you please don't look at me like that.
Well, there she is. Look at her. If I hadn't been ready for her, I'd be lying in her place and you'd be glad, wouldn't you, Steve?
No. Helen, are you insane? Drop that knife, for heaven's sake, and listen to me. She came closer. I made a lunge for her. The grip of that steel about my leg threw me off balance and I fell forward. She sprang on me. I fought her off, but that knife came at me. Face, throat, everywhere like flashes of lightning. Helen, don't do this to me. I swear I came back. Ah! Helen, don't! No! Well, Lieutenant, police car arrived in time to save my life. But I wish they'd let her finish the job. Then and there.
Okay, Gare. Okay, thanks. I'll send the doc right in. And, Gare, I wouldn't worry too much about Helen. I think she'll be all right.
Suspense.
Crimes and Treasons Radio. This is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
And you are tuned in to CIA.